now, all you mangy dogs. Swab the decks and hoist the sails. The guns on board be needing some proper manning. Pieces of eight and a fine wench on your arm, if your work be not too shoddy. Careful not to flounder too badly, though, or you may have to dance the hempen jig as we see you to Davy Jones. The Jeffy, my boy, on with the show.
Well, shiver me timbers. To our listeners from across all regions of the planet, welcome once again aboard the Robin Hood, flagship to the world's one and only cooperatively inspired charity podcast network. Live streaming today from under widely sprayed South Korean skies, you've dropped in to a very hazily dimmed episode 52 of Pirate Radio Podcasts and our second annual Fukushima World Roundtable. I'm your host and ship's chief communications officer, Jaffe Ryder. 6 years ago to the day, disaster of unparalleled precedent struck the shores of southeastern Japan. A major earthquake triggered a massive tsunami that hit the island with full force and unleashed an instant world of hell. Claiming many thousand innocent lives, Asia's land of the rising sun was suddenly thrown into a major crisis. Among the most pressing concerns were the disturbing developments unfolding at the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear power facility. Substandard safety measures, shoddy construction, and managerial standards all helped give rise to the worst-case scenario, including dramatic on-site explosions and the meltdown of multiple central reactors. Grave concern regarding radioactive fallout quickly spread around the globe as many world citizens, including expert analysts, health and safety watchdogs, and political leaders, all suddenly found themselves engaged. As mind-boggling as it was to comprehend, things were very much starting to look like the Ukraine's Chernobyl disaster all over again. So prepare yourself for a lively, interactive, 90-minute discussion as we welcome our guests from around the world while taking your comments, questions, and thoughts via our live streaming YouTube chat. Here's a few vital areas we aim to explore. Namely, over the course of the past 6 years, has the full impact of Fukushima been effectively resolved? Or are there still many lingering long-term issues? What actually caused the disaster? Who was to blame? Has there been any effective accountability? How could things have been done differently? Is there a risk of any similar occurrences? How safe is nuclear energy? And finally, what can you do to learn more, get involved, and help those whose lives are still affected? Here we go, sailing out to sea on yet another weekly pirate adventure with the Pirate Radio Podcasts. We've assembled a few of the crew here to join us on board the Robin Hood. Unfortunately, one of the guests that we had lined up dropped out at the last minute, and we can maybe get into that in more detail as the show unfolds here. But first of all, let's check and see to make sure that we've got everyone that we thought we had. Lord Stompy, you're having some technical issues, or do we got you?
Hello, can you hear me, sir?
Yeah. Okay, we got you there down on, I'm not sure, where are you on the deck? I'm, as always, hunkered down here in my cabin, my quarters area. You're up on the deck, are you?
No, I'm hiding well below deck, sir. And I'm doing some undercover research into the gay and lesbian kingdoms of the Coral Sea Islands.
Well, speaking of radioactive, now Valkyrie, of course, too, we should hopefully have her out of Kelowna, British Columbia, once again. Valkyrie, did you manage to make it?
I'm here.
Oh, you had. Oh, we got a little bit of echo. We have to take care of that right off the bat. Might want to turn your speakers down and maybe
is that better?
turn them apart from one another? Go ahead. One more. Testing, testing. Echo. I think we're doing a little better there. So, great. Yeah, you're in Kelowna today once again, are you?
I am indeed.
All right. And how are things there?
Horrible.
Okay.
The weather has been absolutely mental.
Okay. I'm not sure if there's any other pressing updates or things you want to draw to our attention, ourselves as well as the listeners in general, right off the bat, but probably we do want to get into the show itself, focus on Fukushima as soon as possible, of course. So, go ahead, Stompy.
I'll take my attention away from the gay takeover of the Coral Islands, the Kingdom of the Coral Islands, which I thought was a good little side project to do because a bunch of gays and lesbians have basically taken over some small Australian islands and declared themselves independent. They're even being treated as a hostile nation now by Australia.
Well, how about that? Jeez.
Yeah. They were told in the Senate, in the Treasury Department, to take down the gay and lesbian flag because it's now considered a flag of a hostile nation.
Well, those Australian politicians better watch it. It won't be too much longer, and they'll end up being, someone's going to end up labeling them as having committed discrimination.
That's right. They'll have the rainbow flag waved at them, and not in a nice way.
That's a great scoop. We'll have to follow up on that at some point here in the not-too-distant future. So let's just quickly, we can talk about more of this behind the scenes with the
definitely
the back end of things here today with the Rogues Gallery. Pirate Larry, I think he was there in the lead-up to things. Do we got you back?
Yeah, we're here, Jeffy.
He's up there. He's there in the crow's nest.
Up in the crow's nest with three-eyed flying fish and wonderments of nature.
Three-eyed flying fish. That sounds like Blinky. Is that the name of the fish from out of the Simpsons there that Mr. Burns had he had some problems eating?
Yeah, you have to kill it or they multiply.
I see. So isn't that something? Which reminds me, and this is a little bit on topic, Monsanto, they're all for GMOs except for when it comes to their cafeteria. Kind of one of the things I just read again yesterday. That seems to be one of the stories that's circulating. So isn't that something? That really says a lot as far as this, Frankenfoods and radioactivity and contamination of our food supply is concerned, things like that.
If we had a cook who refused to eat his own food, we'd kill him for poisoning the crew.
That's usually how it works. Yeah, that's how it works. Yeah, just toss him overboard. That's probably the...
Make him eat his own food first.
Yeah, well, for sure.
That would definitely be a proper punishment.
That's right.
Yeah. Okay, so, well, here's the deal, folks. Pete Lopez actually was another character that I reached out to, as well as someone who joined us last year. Tom Schaefer was a part of things. This is all your first time to, be on board here for our Fukushima special. This is, of course, the second year we've done this. But nothing, no word back from Tom yet. Had extended an invitation, hoping that he might show up. He's always got some, last year at least, he managed to have some pretty good insight into things on top of a lot of the issues. Pete Lopez, of course, too, one of the newbies that's been kind of hanging out and, expressing something of an interest at least in being a part of the operation here and the crew. Now, as far as Moto from Japan is concerned, we had him on board last year. Right at the last minute, though, as was stated earlier, he backed out for whatever reason. So I'll tell you, just last night I got a message from him, and he gave me a really long, it was like, it would have ended up being like a half hour sort of spiel, kind of overview, and I'll bring it up here if I don't already have it. But it's kind of a rundown. What's going on, I guess, in Japan right now is that the politicians, they're no longer interested or willing to help subsidize or help support and offset the costs of the people that have been evacuated from the region. I'm not sure the exact numbers. I'm sure all these questions would be simple enough for someone like Moto to help fill us in on as far as the particulars go, but they've apparently withdrawn the funding, and it's causing a lot of grief. A lot of people, of course, are rather upset over the whole thing. Many people, as you might imagine, have not only lost their lives, but the ones who are still living are out of work. It's hard for them to find any means of gainful employment after having had so much infrastructure completely destroyed. So has anyone heard about this as far as the, I'm not sure, look, Stompy, I know you've been following things quite closely. Pete Lopez had told me that he had been looking into things, but anything along these lines that you're kind of up to speed with, or is there something more, perhaps maybe even a related matter, or just even to something more pressing you want to bring up?
No, I'm very well versed in a lot of the historical stuff, but the latest news I was assuming was going to be brought up by our guests. So I just had a lot of background supportive stuff here. Obviously, if the government's given up, that's generally a sign that the problem's actually so bad that they don't really know what to do anymore. So that's a very worrying sign for the Japanese people themselves. When your government gives up on a problem like that, it means that they're running out of ideas and funds generally.
That could very well be the case. With the cleanup process over the past few years, I know that from what they reported on last year, it was kind of news to me, Moto was accompanied with a friend of his, older gentleman, who was like a professor-type personality. His English was not very good at all, unfortunately, so Moto helped translate. Basically, one of the things that was happening, and maybe even still is, once again, was hoping to get clarification on this matter, but that the Yakuza had been actually recruiting people, drawing them, pulling them into Shanghaiing to some extent, I guess, and having them work there on the ground on the actual site of Fukushima Daiichi, the nuclear facility, and assisting with the cleanup measures. That was, you know, these are people who maybe owed them a little bit of money, let's say, or some sort of debt, really was kind of what it came down to, and that's how they figured they could maybe kind of wipe the slate clean. Or who knows, I'm not sure what kind of deals were struck, but you can just imagine, I wouldn't be too happy myself if I had to find myself in that sort of a situation. The latest, though, too, of course, is that, I guess these, what is it, the core reactors have now totally sunk right through the foundations on which they were based and have totally melted through, and they're sinking now into the earth. Has anyone been following that at all?
Yes, Jaffe. There's some video footage. They did send some almost radiation-proof robots with cameras in. Theoretically, they were tested to be able to withstand up to about 10 hours of intense radiation. We're talking about radiation levels here that a person would die within seconds of being around this level of radiation. So they got the robots into the reactors, and the radiation was so intense that the robots began to burn out after 2 hours. So I've watched extensive footage of that. It took the Japanese government and scientists $3 million and 6 months to prepare two robots that then burned out within 2 hours. And the footage that the robots got back showed that they'd need to send in many more similar robots just to be able to assess the situation. So we're looking at something that's so critical and has gone so far past the point of the best efforts of science to be able to try and assess and to contain. It's actually baffling to me still to conceive that our entire nuclear reactors are just sinking through the earth, that they're eventually going to end up in the ocean, Jaffe.
That's not very good, is it? Pirate Larry, you just added a link there in the side area to our Skype chat. What is it about these robots exactly? That there's been quite a few that have been dying. Has there not? This is not the first one.
Well, there are two. As far as I know, there have been two. And they both burned out because of the radiation. They can't even build robots to go in and take a look at how bad it is. That's how bad it is. This is a third atomic bombing of Japan. I mean, this is a worldwide catastrophe, and nobody's really awake to it. And it seems like the whole nuclear industry, the whole, you know, General Electric and all those people, they really don't know what to do. They're throwing up their hands, too. So, you know, maybe this type of electricity is too dangerous to continue with. If we're going to, you know, have radiation that lasts for hundreds of thousands of years, and fish die-offs in Chile, we've had, you know, the sardines have died off, bigger fish have died off all around the coast of Chile. All my friends in Northern California are having problems with iodine. They need more potassium iodine in their diet because strontium-90, no, it's not strontium-90, it's the other one, cesium-132. We'll go in and replace the iodine in your body if you're not careful. So if you have enough iodine, potassium iodine in your body, then the cesium-132 won't come in. But that's airborne, and that's affecting the whole northern coast of California.
You know, there really seems to be a huge effort to, you know, there's a lot of mind control that goes on with the disinformation wars. Media outlets trying, in some cases at least, to get the actual facts across and out there to the public, while at the same time there seem to be certain vested interests at stake, such as perhaps these shareholders in the nuclear power industry, who it really goes against their best interest to have another Chernobyl on their hands. And that's what it seems is the case. That's what we do seem to have. Now, whether it's worse or not, that's debatable. Some people are saying that it is. In a lot of ways, it seems like the big, the corporate media, they want to downplay things for some reason. Or am I just, that's my kind of gut feeling and impression after coming across just the multitude of reports, really, and seeing what it is that they have to offer. Are they doing that, do you think? I'm not sure who wants to take that or address that.
If you remember the oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico, BP did, it was on the news every night. They had cameras down there looking at the oil, right? As soon as Fukushima happened, it was like silent. Everybody was quiet. And it's been quiet ever since. There are doctors and endocrinologists that are very alarmed along the West Coast and, you know, are trying to tell their patients, you know, to change their diet. But, you know, diet can only help so much. This is a catastrophe, and the world should wake up to this and direct its attention to this.
Now, the thing that I've noticed is it's recently actually getting worse than it's ever been, because the reactor cores, as we have noted, are still melting. They're melting into the earth. And when the reactors blew up, the largest measurements was 300 sieverts of radiation at the time of the explosion. So that was enough to kill you within a minute or so. But when they sent these robots that burned out into the reactor this time, it absolutely shocked them. They got into the core of reactor two. Now, you've got to realize there's three reactors that are, they're hemorrhaging radiation. And it's now gone up to 570 sieverts of radiation. If you were a person near that, you would literally be dead within several seconds. This is the highest level of radiation ever being measured on the planet. And to make matters worse, to try and stop the reactor cores completely blowing up, they're using this process where they're keeping them cool with water. If they didn't keep cooling them down with water, they would react entirely. What's happening is 300 tons of this water is flowing into the ocean a day. Now, that's 300 tons. I don't know anything about statistics, but in the cleanup operation, two Japanese workers got a small hole in their radiation suits, and they both got exposed, just their skin got exposed to some of this water. Within 5 or 10 minutes, they had to be evacuated. Both of them had to go to hospital. They both survived, but they had quite bad radiation sickness for weeks on end. And what we're being told by the media and by politicians is that there's no great danger. The Japanese people are being told it's okay to eat fish and sushi still. And yet we're dumping 300 tons of this water into the sea a day. If you just get splashed with this water on your skin, you're going to have intense radiation sickness to the point where you're nearly going to die. Now, you can't tell the public that dumping 300 tons of water that is that toxic to a human being into the ocean every day for the last 5 years is not doing something really, really bad to our environment.
Well, and that's the thing, is that because of this, these vested interests, this is how I cannot help but see it, is they want to downplay certain things, such as the disasters, obviously, and then, on the other hand, exaggerate and really build up other issues that are not such a big deal. And as we saw in the recent election, of course, too, they totally blew their credibility, the establishment, corporate media. They can't be trusted or believed at all now, as in the unfortunate case. You know, they're proven liars. The support for media was, what, in a single-digit area to begin with, so it's pretty sad. And as you say, Larry, you haven't seen much reporting on this then over the last little while. This is the 6th anniversary. We, of course, did our show here last year, which that would make it the 5th. Today is the day, believe it or not. We're actually, you know, streaming live here via YouTube. We have a couple people there that have joined us in the side area with the live chat, the two Pirate Joes. We can make out there. There's actually, it happens to be, there's five folks out there in internet land that seem to think this is something worth tuning into and checking out, maybe reflecting upon, hopefully getting a
ahoy team. Folks,
yeah, ahoy, and getting some little bits of information perhaps, or jewels of nuggets of information that maybe they hadn't stumbled across in the past. So now why don't we turn, I think Valkyrie's there. Young Valkyrie out of Kelowna, let's just give her a chance to chime in. I'm not sure if she's really followed the story much at all, but maybe she could report on, this is always interesting, from her perspective, what's going on and what she's seen in the, not only just the local, but also national media, if she's followed, you know, the issue to any extent. So what have you seen, Valkyrie? Has the Canadian media been reporting on this at all over the past number of years or even recently, or has it completely fallen off their radar?
Media hasn't covered it whatsoever. News outlets don't really touch on the matter. They pretend that everything's fine. You can thank Justin Trudeau for that. But if you look beyond that, a lot of the West Coast, Vancouver regions, cancer centers are giving free treatment and free studies to try and understand where this mysterious cancer is coming from. And these are people that live by the water. They eat the fish from the ocean and everything else. Like, I know when I would take trips to Vancouver, you could walk along the coast and everyone would be selling oysters, clams, fish. It's not happening. Or it's happening in a smaller amount. And the excuse is that there's not anything to fish, which is true, but not in the sense that they're trying to say where it's low population. It's the fact that most of the fish are developing tumors, they're cancerous. Just about 4 or 5 months ago, one of the biggest companies for cancer research in Vancouver is giving 1,500 patients free cancer research. Now, the claim is for studying how to prevent the cancer. Reality is they're trying to figure out how to combat all the radiation that's occurring in the water and in the food that they're eating. So it's affecting us. It's affecting us severely. Most people aren't going to sushi shops anymore. If you're ordering fish, you're ordering it from the East Coast now instead of the West Coast, which is a huge blunder for exports and imports of sockeye salmon, because that's all on the West Coast. While on the East Coast, you get the Atlantic fish. And most people don't purchase that because that's high fat. But now it's really the only option you can get because sockeye salmon is very thin. It's very sickly. It's overpriced if you can actually order decent quality. But nobody is reporting on it. No one whatsoever is reporting on it. You can search all day long for a news report in Canada. It's just not going to happen. And if it is, it's highly biased in saying that we're fixing it and everything's okay.
When you're saying no one's reporting on it, that is just strictly, as far as the establishment, mainstream, corporate media is concerned, what of the alternative media? Have you come across any reports via the web, because of course that's where all the best information exists. That's where it all happens. It's where it all goes down. Any luck or success in that area?
Rebel Media, which is my favorite media source, they've touched on it a bit, but lately it's a lot about, of course, Islam. But if you do search in there, they have quite a few articles on it for the Fukushima radiation. There's quite a few Canadian forums where people share information and what they've seen and witnessed. Actually, there's even not many people go on there anymore. It's kind of a dying website, but 4chan is actually looking to open up a new poll on discussing it, which shows the severity, because 4chan is really just about shitty memes and horrible jokes, and they're actually considering opening up a forum to talk about it. If you're getting 4chan on board with it, something is wrong.
Well, how about that? Yeah. I'm actually surprised that they didn't do that a long time ago, you know, right when everything was unfolding and developing back 6 years ago.
Oh, no, 4chan. Oh, 4chan is not a news media outlet in any sense, in any way at all. Like, it's where random people around the world post whatever they want. And if you went on B, which is random, you would see a lot of memes and a lot of jokes about it, while some actual reports on what's going on. And people were genuinely freaking out about it. But it's so severe now where it's like, hey, we need an actual genuine forum for this. It's such a huge talked about aspect of the community. Even if 6 years have passed, people are still talking about it. They're still making memes about it. Like, half of it's joking and a little dark, but the other half is serious conversation about what's going on. And I find it horrifying and funny at the same time that people who go on 4chan are actually talking about the issue, yet genuine media outlets aren't even touching it. If that doesn't say anything about the media, I don't know what does.
Yeah, I'm kind of surprised, once again, that more hasn't been done via 4chan, if only because that's said to be the origins of where this anonymous idea originated.
It's because Moot stepped down, if you know who Moot is.
No idea. Like, no idea.
Moot's the great guy who actually made 4chan. Now, 4chan's been shut down several times and brought back, but after a while, Moot just finally gave up from all the stress of dealing with it, and he stepped down. And the creator of 8chan, which is a really terrible knockoff, is being offered the chance to step up, or the creator of Mega Upload. So there's a lot of stress going on there in the higher-ups and on what to do and who's getting the power, so there's not a lot of work being done on the site. It'll always run, though. 4chan will never die, but for severe changes in forums and whatnot, it's not going to happen until all that gets ironed up.
8chan, double your fun and games, as well as the flow of information and what have you. So
it's a cheap knockoff.
more of a bang for your buck. Well, we do have the streaming slideshow running here. As always, people want to take a look at that on YouTube. I'm not even sure how to describe the picture. Quite haunting, really, I guess, is one way of the whole situation and history. Speaking of which, haunting, there are some stories circulating that I actually came across a couple of years ago, where there had been these reportedly taxi drivers would drive near the area of where, I guess, the tsunami hit and the whole kind of Fukushima area and, you know, one of the nearby suburbs. And they would pick up these young ladies, maybe in their early 20s and whatnot. Girls would sit down in the back. They wouldn't apparently say much. The taxi driver would ask them where they were going, where they like to take them, and they would just point ahead, wouldn't say anything. The driver would drive on and take them in that direction. And before too long, the driver would then turn around, and lo and behold, there was no one actually sitting there. If you can actually believe that. This apparently has happened a few times, not just once or twice.
Being a ghost is the best way to avoid your cab fares, you see. Sorry for the bad humour in this appalling situation. I'm Australian. But I would like to add here that what's happening around the world is we're having armies of amateur people analysing the problem themselves. Here in Australia, up the north of Australia, it's even been affecting us. There's been the cesium 136 or 137, whatever, has come over in the airstream. It's nowhere near as bad as the west coast of America, obviously, but the nature of Fukushima is it really is a global catastrophe. Our scientists haven't released anything on it. Been looking at YouTube videos and some little smaller Australian science stations that are independent. They've been finding everything from slightly increased levels of radiation in moss growing on people's roofs in the north of Australia. The moss, of course, filters out a lot of the tiny particles and incorporates radioactive particles into its biological structure. There's raised levels of short-lived radioactive material in bananas. And this is all people with Geiger counters at home or very small science labs. If you really start digging, it's a bit hard to find if you're just an average public person at home. But where the scientists aren't doing their job and where the media's not doing their job, we've got these army of concerned people around the world who are desperately trying to get the facts out. Their voices aren't being heard. And then it really annoys me because I found some mainstream reporter. He was a Western reporter and he went to Japan and gave you this report saying, oh, you know, 300 tons of nuclear waste water into the ocean every day is nothing. You know, there's billions of tons of water in an ocean. 300 tons is just like a drop in a bucket. We don't have to worry about the effects. And then he sat down and the, you know, some Japanese politician gave him a piece of sushi to eat that was caught in Japan. He was like, yeah, I ate a piece of sushi in Japan. You know, I'm fine. I didn't get radiation poison. And this is promoted in, you know, it was one of those mainstream fake news rags. I found more than one article like that that was just totally downplaying any danger. Situation's gone back to normal. Well, excuse me, if the situation's gone back to normal, why are we recording the highest levels of radiation in history? And why are nuclear reactors melting through bedrock and about to fall permanently into the ocean? If anything, all I can say here is from all the reports that I've been seeing, even the official reports, if you join the dots, if you add the data together, it actually looks like the situation is worsening, not getting better. It looks like there's going to be more radioactive fallout. And judging by the state of the ocean and the state of what's blowing around in the air in our planet, it's been a lot worse than Chernobyl, a lot worse. And also Chernobyl, we're at least able to contain it, okay? It took a lot of work, a lot of people died doing it, but they spent billions of dollars and they built the shell around it. Fukushima, our scientists are stumped. They do not know how to stop. Now that they've melted through bedrock, there's just no known way you could get any kind of machinery in there to pick up a nuclear reactor melting through bedrock. It's just they don't know how to deal with it. So I think part of the conspiracy of silence is this is so bad that they literally don't know what to do and their only option is to stay silent, fearing a massive public outcry at what danger that we all are in, what danger the planet is in, and the potential collapse of our ocean ecosystems within the next 10 years. You know, it's going from potential to we're actually beginning to see all these signs that it's not good. So,
yeah, and what you said too about it being more extreme and having an impact on the Earth's environment and ecosystem, even beyond Chernobyl, some analysts and experts have been making that claim indeed. On top of that, let's not forget, not too many people know about this, but one of the things apparently that happened with the construction of the site and facility at the time of its origins back in, oh gosh, I think it was what, the early 70s or something like that, perhaps? But what they did, these dimwits, there were these natural earthen embankments. And even I, as an outsider, making a selection choice to move to East Asia, quite purposely opted against going to Japan for this reason. You know, I could clearly see and, you know, well, I'm think putting the connecting the dots, tsunamis and earthquakes. I didn't quite factor in nuclear power plants, but if I would have known at the time, I would have easily entered that into the equation too. But yeah, I was not wanting to be in the eye of the storm there by any means. So that's why a more central location here in South Korea was seemed to be desirable. But what they had were these natural earthen embankments in place along the coast that they brought in with all their heavy construction equipment. Got to put those guys to work, you know, and take down that earth. You know, so what they did was they leveled it all out, and they essentially, they removed all this natural defense that Mother Nature had provided, that in the event that tsunami had occurred, as it did, and the hills, as they were, had remained in place. Apparently, what people have said that have looked into the matter is that this would never have happened in the first place. So, I mean, you talk about a major blunder, or was it? You could get a little conspiratorial, I suppose, and say that, well, it was done for a reason, too. So, who knows?
Well, Jeffy.
Yeah.
This was one of the most interesting pieces of information I found. I can't verify it because I would need to find the original footage. But according to this article, in the early morning news flash, 8/9/2014, NHK, the Japanese news service, announced that they found pieces of nuclear fuel, fuel rods, reactor pressure vessels, and pieces of internal structure that were 130 kilometres away from the Fukushima nuclear power plant. They found a 2-nanometer particle, and it had a ball-looking shape. That proves that it was molten in an extremely high temperature and was projected at extreme velocity and then quickly cooled down. The particles, of course, contained uranium, zirconium, etc. So this is really weird because there's been this conspiracy of silence, but it's strange because people that reported this were actually the University of Tokyo. So what this suggested to me, this was a thing that triggered me, because they said the plants themselves blew up due to generation of hydrogen gas. When I saw this news report that said, if this is true, this is an official release of information by Tokyo University, I was thinking, well, there's no known conventional explosion, especially with hydrogen, that could blow material 130 kilometres away from the power plant. There's only one known way that this could happen, and that would literally be some kind of a nuclear explosion. I followed this up a little bit more, and unlike Chernobyl, which did not have massively reinforced ceiling, concrete walls sealing it in, Fukushima was very, very well designed. So the reinforced steel concrete walls around the Fukushima plants were designed to withstand a meltdown. Their strength was second only to industrial dam walls.
The Titanic of nuclear reactors.
Yeah, and then the thing was I looked at some pictures. These were designed to have a small nuclear reaction go off within them. And the walls were literally exploded apart. And you're talking about concrete reinforced walls that are designed to take an explosion from within that are 6 feet thick. These walls, they're wider than an average sedan car on the street. And so those two pieces of information immediately led me to think, well, they're lying to us about it being a conventional explosion, because that there's no way that those two pieces of information could go together. Something went critical, something blew up, and it wasn't hydrogen, it was definitely something nuclear. So that immediately opens the can of a whole bunch of conspiracy theories, many of which we cannot prove, but something much more than what the authorities told us about the initial event has happened there. I'm certain of it.
Very well be, and I would say almost certainly is, because, I mean, really, when has the government ever spoken the truth? You know, the governments always find ways of twisting and warping reality in a way that supports and promotes their particular, whatever agenda it is that they're trying to roll out and foist upon the public. So we have a few extra couple people that have dropped by and are taking part in today's live streaming end of things via YouTube, including longtime friend, haven't seen her for a while, Bathtub Jen. Yo, in the house. It's great to see her once again. And Joe Triple Three, the two private Joes, Joe Eminon and Joe Triple Three. But Joe Triple Three actually is a fellow expat here living in Korea, and he states that he will not eat sushi because of this. The fact is, neither, well, I do eat sushi, but, you know, when this happened, immediately red flags are going off, and the wife and I had some pretty serious conversations regarding what sort of food that we'd be consuming in the future, sea-based food, fish and the like in particular. So speaking of which, you know, and we can come back to any of these points that have been raised here. You just, you know, keep that in mind. So we have a lot of time here left to go yet, not quite an hour, but Hillary Clinton, good old Hillary, as Secretary of State, I guess, at the time of the disaster, what she did, and this might go back to what Valkyrie was referring to regarding the traitor, Trudeau, and using that term, in particular, his policy that and position he's taken with respect to this very liberal open door way of bringing in all kinds of outsiders, mostly of the Muslim faith, while at the same time abandoning countless Canadians. So for me, I'm sorry, that just doesn't sit right, nor does it go over too well with just a lot of regular, ordinary, everyday Canadians. But what Hillary Clinton did, I guess, was she just kind of magically waved her little witchy wand, her little witchy spirit cooking wand, and suddenly the what was considered to be acceptable levels of radioactivity for health and safety standards within food, suddenly those parameters just magically expanded, essentially going right through the roof, so that they were able to accommodate these ridiculously high radiation readings that they were picking up, presumably via the Fukushima disaster. So how about that, hey? So
happened here in Australia as well. We seafood levels got put up. Interestingly, one of those smaller Australian amateur sites, the woman bought herself a small Geiger counter, and she'd warned various family members against eating fish. Just as an experiment, she'd always wave it over fish. Now, she said mostly it was okay, but she said, "What? This is the nature of radioactivity. If you get a particle of, you know, something very toxic like plutonium or something in a living organism." Basically, anyway, her daughter opened a can of tuna, and she told her daughter, "Don't eat tuna, you know, it's potentially highly radioactive." She waved this Geiger counter over the tuna, and she said it just went off the scale. Like, it was way, way above public health and safety standards. Who is going to sit there with a Geiger counter with every piece of fish we catch to test, to see? You know, you could have 90% of them will be safe, and you get one fish that's been in a particular stream or current in the ocean, and it will have just ingested a lot of particles, and it'll be way, way above anything healthy or safe. And that's the problem with radiation. Once it gets into living organisms, it just makes its way through the food chain, man. You can't get that out.
Well, or maybe you can, depending on what you turn to or what solutions are sought out. The unfortunate case is that in Japan, once again, we had Moto join us here last year, and one of the comments that he made with respect to this was when I brought up the idea or potentiality of using hemp as a way of cleaning things up as a solution, because this is something that had been hit on earlier by a professor or maybe two that had looked into the matter, stating that if industrial, you can try to smoke it, of course, too. That's always the fear that's raised by the prohibitive, the fanatical, you know, the authorities that with their, you know, with their prohibitive agendas. But this is the industrial grade, folks, with the minuscule, you know, THC levels. So you can smoke a whole field of it and still just come out with nothing but maybe a bit of a headache, of course. But that it would essentially, if planted throughout the region, it would soak up all of the radioactive materials in a very effective way. And what his response was, what his take on the whole thing was, oh, geez, you know, ooh, hemp, because he was confused. You know, isn't marijuana? Oh, hemp. And then came back saying, oh, hemp is evil. Hemp is evil. So, I mean, that's very common. That's just how, unfortunately, and quite sadly, how many people throughout Asia have been indoctrinated and, you know, dumbed down. Let's just keep it real here, folks. Over the years, since the U.S., mostly Washington, led propaganda machine has flown into high gear. It wasn't until just 1976, in fact, that even here in Korea, that recreational, medicinal, or if you want to use it for spiritual reasons too, as some people do claim, that the holy herb became illegal, under the law in Korea in 1976. As a matter of fact, under the recently impeached president, who, by the way, just formally was removed from office yesterday, her father was the one who, back at that time, brought in prohibition in Korea. Up until that point, it had just been seen largely as it is in places like China and even North Korea, believe it or not, a traditional Asian medicinal herb. But that's really unfortunate. You know, when it does come to solving problems such as this, you know, straight out of the Bible, Genesis 1, people, you know, even as the green herb have I given you all things as meat. And what these bastards do, these, I'm not sure how to describe them, really. It just seems to be largely, it's a greed-driven agenda, frankly, quite pathological. It's the most mind-boggling thing you could imagine. You know, you could save people, you could help to clean up the environment and resolve things, but because of this ignorance and lack of political will at the highest levels, that they simply just refuse to implement or bring solutions such as these on board. How tragic.
Yeah, and considering they traditionally in Asian countries, they used to wear hemp sandals. That's quite an ability to change people's culture within a generation or two, really.
Oh, yeah. But, you know, even here in the south of Korea, they still do grow industrial hemp, actually, for things like the traditional, it's what's called hanbok, the traditional celebratory dress that they wear at weddings and maybe, you know, sometimes funerals or things, ancestral ceremonies and things like that. Drowning in a sea of alcohol. So, yeah, you can drink yourself to death, but don't you dare inhale. Anyways, okay, moving things along now. Yeah, Joe Emanon, lodging a bit of a complaint there too in the YouTube sidelines, in the chat area here, saying that now that I can use all the weed I can lay my hands on legally, I can't find any. Is it legal in New York now? I didn't know that. Did they legalize it finally? Pirate Larry probably, he knows the deal there, I'm sure, because recent election was all about, you know, Trump and legalizing weed.
Yeah, so I think that you can go on the web. And if you are from a legalized state, you can order from another legalized state, and DHL will ship it to you. You know, that's what I've heard.
We can have it shipped to us here in Korea then, right?
If it's legalized in Korea, it can be shipped to Korea. If it's illegal in Korea, it cannot be shipped.
We're working on changing things here, believe me. So just doing what we can in our own little way.
If it's legal in New York and he wants to buy from a website in Colorado, where it's legal, or state of Washington where it's legal, or Oregon or California requires a medical card from a doctor. But, you know, they legalized it, so implementation will be about a year in California. If they just legalized it in New York, it might take a year for implementation too. But if he's got a doctor's prescription for it, he should be able to get it. Also, have Joe look for a research, you know, university research facilities. People have grants to study patients who use this stuff. That might be good.
If I may, it doesn't seem to be legalized. It seems to be decriminalized. So for medical patients, you're fine to use it. But for up to 25 grams, civil violation incurs fines but no jail time. Anything up above that, it will give you 3 months to jail, 1 year to jail, 1 to 4 years, 1 to 7 years, and 1 to 15 years, depending on how much you're carrying. So technically decriminalized, just like Canada. But if you're carrying enough for selling rather than recreational use, it is a criminal offense still.
All right. Well, there we go. Breaking things down for us there via, I'm not sure, what kind of a deep, hidden, underground cave in Kelowna, or a deep, more a bunker, I suppose.
My bat cave of unlimited information.
Ah, there we go. That's what I was looking for. Exactly. So, you know, but there are various solutions to be found, and people that have been doing a lot of good work, including this fellow out of the region who's been working, I imagine he still is, hopefully he hasn't fallen sick or anything, working out of the area with animals. It goes by the name of, it was reported, I guess, in various media sources over the last couple of years, including the boardpanda.com link that I shared with folks there in the YouTube chat area. His name is Naruto Matsumura. So we have a lot of pictures with him working with the animals in the slideshow that we have streaming today, and as well as the link there too that people can easily find the chat area, and we'll also be sure to add to the show notes. So let's not forget too that the USS Ronald Reagan, did anyone hear about that, or do you remember the naval personnel that went in to help and then shortly thereafter fell very sick, some of them dying?
There was about 130 at least that got sick, and as I said, as my first comments, I said, well, that's not surprising. I mean, even if your ship is just floating, I'll just say it one more time, if that water touches your skin, just get splashed on you, you're going to get bad radiation sickness.
Yeah.
They're pumping 300 tons of that straight into the ocean a day. So, you know, even just getting the kind of sea spray and some of the evaporation off that, that's how insidious it is. You've just being anywhere near that in the waters, floating above the water. They've banned ships from, I don't know the exact radius, but you're not allowed within about 5 kilometer radius of the outlet.
Now, I know you've talked a little bit about finding some anomalies outside of what the officially prescribed, you know, parameters of thought are concerned, Stompy. But there's a researcher, investigative journalist by the name of Jim Stone, who's done a lot of great work into the disaster. He's got a PDF that's easily available online, along with a website and a lot of... Yep. Other information.
It's, I can tell you that website now. It's in front of me. www.jimstonefreelance.com. Right. That's scary when you look that up. The thing that's more scary about Jim Stone is some of his allegations he makes. I won't go into the full details. It would take a long time. Some of the allegations he makes seemed a little bit far-fetched, but I researched in my own time a little bit of what he was talking about. Basically, he was saying there was a possibility that the plants had actually been sabotaged so that when they failed, they would fail catastrophically. He alleged a high likelihood from the evidence that a virus called the Stuxnet, it had attacked the cooling systems mainly of the plant.
That's right.
And that sounded really far-fetched. It's like, hey, you know, it was meant to be one of the most advanced viruses in the world. It was meant to do all this amazing stuff, and the people running the plant were, as the plant cooling systems shut down, the computers were still reading that they were working. So it was this multi-level virus that was invented to sabotage. Now, I actually looked that up. I found a mainstream article in The Guardian, of all places, talking all about the Stuxnet virus. So this is mainstream media reporting it, and it was saying how the Israeli government used it to completely sabotage the Iranian nuclear processing plant. It was developed by the Israeli government to take out the Iranian nuclear processing enrichment plant. The article said that the virus did all those things that it was meant to do. It kept the plant running, but it was basically all the equipment was sabotaging itself. But in the meantime, all the computers at the plant were reading that systems were normal. So the operators couldn't work out why everything was starting to screw up.
Well, yeah, and that was widely reported, exactly as you say, of Stuxnet being implicated within the context of the Israel government. I guess some kind of black ops sort of deal or operation trying to throw a wrench into the works as far as the Iranian nuclear program is concerned. Pirate Larry, I think you know a little bit more about this whole deal too, don't you?
Stuxnet was a project of our own little CIA, and it was done in collaboration with the Israelis, and it only had one purpose, and that purpose was to sabotage the nuclear reactors in Iran. It was based on this simple little thing that ran out and looked for certain machines that were attached. to the internet. Now, all of the nuclear power plant machinery is supposed to be detached from anything that comes from the internet. So there was a question of how it got into Iran, but they were successful at launching Stuxnet and getting it into Iran. It found these power regulators. When it found the right one, it would just remain silent for a long time. You wouldn't even know you had the virus. And what it would do is it would read everything that was going on in a normal situation. And then it would enact something that would, you know, make the centrifuges shake, you know. And if the centrifuges shake, they could break and it's a disaster. So that's what they would do. They would throw them off their spin and report back to the office that everything was normal. That's what Stuxnet was built to do. Now, if they tested it out on Fukushima, I don't know. You know, maybe they saw, never let a disaster go to waste. I mean, there was a tsunami, but that could have been weather wars too. I don't know. But why, you know, why pick on Japan? I don't know.
Well, I'll tell you why.
Me and Jaffe know why. We both know why. Because as part of the Japanese government's nuclear program, they actually struck up a deal to send certain types of uranium to Iran for enrichment, and this did not please Israel one bit at all, and that's all I'm going to say on that subject.
You know, and to add to that, more along the similar lines, apparently just in the lead-up to things, maybe within the week or two prior to the disaster, coincidentally, the Japanese government had declared Palestine to be an independent and sovereign state, more or less, something along those lines. So that sent a pretty clear message to Tel Aviv, which some analysts and observers have said led to the disaster that the world witnessed. And now what happened out in the ocean, apparently, was that the earthquake itself was triggered by what else but a mini nuke that was planted. I'm not sure it would have been planted, obviously, in the ocean, submerged at some point along the seabed or what have you, at a key point and location where, if it went off, that it would manage and help to trigger a tsunami. Now, that also can be done, apparently, though, via HAARP, as I understand. There have been reports of that being the case, too. So using the scalar weaponry and technology, Tesla-based, of course, they can manage to do that, along with all kinds of other totally wonderful things, too. So has anyone heard of this, as far as the mini-nuke being planted in the ocean at the strategic location, maybe along like one of the plates running along the coast or what have you, and in turn triggering the tsunami?
Yeah, I've heard that one, definitely. You know, these things, it comes down to speculation. It's very hard for us to prove,
right, of course,
anything, especially once a nuclear power plant starts hemorrhaging into the ocean. There's no real way he could prove any nuclear activity preceded that.
It is coincidental. You know how they say in politics, everything is timing.
What was interesting to me was it was meant to be one of the greatest earthquakes in history, and it was only 25 kilometers off land. And the strange thing was that Fukushima, nobody was prepared, even though apparently it was the greatest earthquake that they'd had for 100 years or whatever. And Japan's got very, very good programs in place for dealing with earthquakes. So when a massive tremor happens, they've got all their equipment that measures it. They've got buoys out at sea to measure wave heights in case there is a tsunami.
Why no girls? That's kind of discriminatory, isn't it?
Yeah, you're allowed to tie boys out in the middle of the ocean, but not girls.
You haven't been to sea, Billy.
I'm all for equality, but I'm good there.
and there was NHK News had an office, studio, right near where the earthquake happened. And while the initial earthquake was happening, there was some footage from inside their studio. Sure, everything was shaking around. Things were falling off the shelves. It looked pretty bad, but people kept typing on their computers. Everyone stayed really calm. No warning was given that people had to evacuate the buildings because it was so bad. All these things have been set up for decades in Japan to operate like clockwork, and the footage is actually on the internet. It's really bizarre. And then 20 minutes later, this massive tsunami comes in and takes them all out. There was no warning. The boys didn't seem to register it. Something's not quite right in the story there. We may never know the exact truth of what happened with Fukushima, but lots of little telltale signs are being left all over the place saying something isn't quite right with even the initial story. Never mind the follow-up with it still hemorrhaging worse than ever before. The initial story, there's all these little pieces of information sort of dangling there. Amateur people like ourselves are trying to find stuff out. Better researchers like Jim Stone are finding even more stuff out. But what we need is for the governments to come clean and tell us what's really going on so that we as people can actually start making some serious democratic decisions of how we're going to deal with all this.
Government come clean? Do you really think that's possible? When has any government anywhere ever come clean on anything?
It's a pipe dream of mine, you see.
Yeah.
Is that one day we have a population that's educated in common sense enough that we can make good decisions for our future, and also that our governments tell us the truth. It's a pipe dream of mine. I'm really an old hippie, I admit it, you know.
Yeah, well, there's no doubt these elected officials, wherever they may be, have got to be held accountable. They don't like it, of course. And once you start to ruffle their feathers or make ripples or waves, there's sometimes repercussions that you are made to face.
That's right. Our unelected elites, who seem to have even more power than our elected officials, tend to have a lot to say about officials that don't run with the official narrative.
My, how time flies when you're aboard the Robin Hood. Kind of winding things down now, about 15 minutes or so left in the show. Is there anyone who has anything more that they'd like to really get out there and let people know about? Maybe something that we've overlooked or missed out on needs to be addressed. Once again, it's unfortunate that Moda was not able to make today's show for whatever reason. I'm just kind of guessing he felt a little uneasy or uncomfortable because we maybe didn't coordinate things along the lines of what he had hoped in the lead up to today's discussion. I know, once again, he did a great job last year. And it was just last night that he sent me this information, too, regarding how the Japanese government is going to apparently suspend housing assistance allowance for evacuees from Fukushima. So this is a big deal, of course, along with the many orphans that have been left without their parents throughout the area, too. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, just the initial evacuation rate was... You're actually seeing now there's 150,000 nuclear refugees within Japan. That's a lot of people. A lot of those refugees have actually chosen to leave Japan. A lot of them permanently relocated to other countries in the world. This is just really the thin end of the wedge. I've seen on YouTube there's Japanese farmers had a town meeting. These Japanese farmers were really irate. They'd farmed the land for generations. They knew there was things wrong with the animal and plant produce that they were producing. They were saying, look, we can see there's signs that we're not selling healthy food to the public. And these poor farmers, they were actually really irate and really guilty that they were selling this contaminated food to the public, and that the government in Japan was telling everybody that everything was okay. So what you're seeing is multi-level social and health problems arising from the breakdowns of these reactors. And this is only the beginning that we're seeing. If things continue to be as bad as they are, there's no doubt that we will see more and more health and social ramifications of this level, not just in Japan, but around the world. As this is hitting the North American coast and the South American coast, that you're looking at the seaboard populations of those countries are starting to get impacted as well now. So this is multifaceted. I would say you could drop a nuclear bomb or two and there actually might be a little bit less long-term damage, because how can you deal with the reactors that are just continuing to melt through bedrock and to hemorrhage? It's a problem that's not going to go away.
I guess we're going to see. We're going to find out here eventually, likely within and over the course of our lifetimes.
I found a link to where you were talking about Yakuza gangsters recruit homeless men for Fukushima.
Yeah.
Nuclear cleanup is on Forbes.com.
Sure.
What do you do with 150,000 refugees? You make them homeless and then recruit them for the cleanup.
Wow. Japanese culture is strange as well. The Yakuza often do jobs that the government is meant to do, so... Sometimes the Yakuzas actually work as police over there, which is a bit odd. It's hard to understand Japanese culture, I'm just saying. The government couldn't do it, so they just turned to their friends, the Yakuza, and said, well, look, we don't want to have the problems on our hands. You guys are the gangsters. You get out there and do it for us. We'll slip you a few million dollars underneath the desk for that one, man. I don't know. I'm a cynic. I was born in the wrong era. I should have been a hippie.
Most pirates are probably quite cynical. That's why we've ended up here in this line of work, I suppose.
Where does cynicism come from, Jaffe? It comes from optimism. And if your optimism gets defeated enough times, you gravitate to the other pole. So that's the way life works.
Oh, if I may add for Canada, since Vancouver does a constant monthly test on the water quality, the only slight benefit from the radiation, and I'm joking about radiation being a benefit, is E. coli has dropped severely in quite a few rivers connected to the ocean because bacteria can't stand the radiation. One of the creeks usually has a 368 mean for E. coli production per, I believe it was square footage of the river or however they measured it out, and it dropped to 50.
That's huge.
Yeah. And I mean, it's great that the E. coli is gone, but to be replaced with radiation is not a benefit whatsoever. What could be done, though, in a more natural standpoint, is to actually implant into the rivers and the oceans algae and seaweed, because they naturally produce iodine. It wouldn't be an official fix, but it would help slow the spread. But for some reason, governments aren't looking into that.
I believe that humanity's never seen a disaster this bad before, and it would be really good if we could lift the veil of silence and actually try to get the greatest experts and the greatest scientists from around the planet to try and cooperate and see if there's anything we can do before it's too late and before we keep losing our ecosystems, before we see more and more people lose their livelihoods. 10 years from now, you could actually, if it keeps going the way it is, a lot of those cities on the west coast are just going to have refugees from them as well, because a lot of your coastal industries are going to die.
Yeah, no, it's been heavily impacted, obviously, the fishing industry in Japan, and I'm not sure where else. I'd imagine, as we've been kind of hitting on here today, that even in the west, too, of course, there's going to be increasingly, we're going to, I guess, going to discover this long-term impact and assorted number of issues arising from the disaster. One of the links I just came across here actually was, and it's a pretty recent one, well, relatively recent, April of last year, stating that the South Korean government is choosing not to disclose radiation test results of Japanese fishery goods. So that's not too comforting or reassuring, clearly.
No. 2 years ago, they sent tons and tons of fish back to Japan. It was one of the articles I found on the Fukushima.
So South Korea had?
Yeah, there was a picture of them sending a boatload of fish back because they didn't pass the test. I don't know, man. Like, it's like they've done in a few countries, including here in Australia, they just, you know, the problem gets worse, so the government eradicates the problem by changing the laws of how much radiation is allowed in our food.
Yeah, just shifting parameters, just kind of keep moving those goalposts around.
What the public needs to do is start slamming iodine. I remember a few years ago, there was actually a world shortage of consumer-grade iodine because so many people in Japan are consuming it now just to ward off radiation sickness that it's actually created a world shortage. People up the west coast of America should be looking at getting iodine supplements and trying to make sure they're actually not from the Pacific Ocean as well. There's various places we extract iodine from, and sea salt is one of those places. So
it's kind of like the claim of vitamins. Vitamins are good for you, but to just take a capsule form of iodine doesn't actually work because your body won't cling to it and absorb it. You need to have it administered through eating actual food. So it's kind of going off my point of planting algae and seaweed. If you intake seaweed, it gives that natural chemical combination to actually absorb into the body. So what you can do is you can take a capsule of iodine and then eat seaweed, because you'll have an extra dose of iodine with the natural chemical compound from the seaweed, and you'll absorb twice as much. Now, if you don't have an actual food source with it, it won't absorb. My second point is there's an underlying issue that people don't look at, which is the tectonic plates in the Pacific Ocean that are clashing together. If those cause a ripple or a full-blown, one of the plates crashes underneath the other, pointing towards the west coast of Canada, that will cause an extreme ripple and mass spread of the radiation. And these plates have been rubbing against each other for a few decades now, and they're ready to collide fully. And if that happens, it's going to be a whole nother realm of issues, way more than what we're dealing with right now. And people aren't looking at that. Actually, if the plates collide and it sweeps over towards the west coast of Canada, Vancouver won't exist. It will be completely washed out.
Wow.
Yeah.
There's a further issue I noticed. This one's about the problem getting worse, because the particles that are traveling through the ocean, of course, are the lightest particles, but they're also generally the most short-lived. You're talking your radioactive iodines, your cesiums. But what's happening is there's the really heavy particles that are the very long-lived one. You're talking thousands of years, sometimes even millions of years. They're all sinking pretty much straight to the bottom. So they're fairly localized. But if you think about it, over decades, the seafloor does shift slowly. It's a much slower process than tides. So over decades, the much more toxic, harmful, and much longer-lived radioactive particles are going to very, very slowly spread out along the sea floor. And that's going to create problems that is the cesium and the iodine, they have half-lives of a few months. You know, so they're not good. They're very toxic, but they do purge from the environment quite quickly. But things like uranium and plutonium, once that gets in the environment, its spread is slower, but it's the end result is much, much more devastating on biology, on the ecological system. So that's something that's not even been mentioned yet.
One of the solutions to radioactive poisoning, as was witnessed following the bombing of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, thank you, Harry Truman, well done. Japanese people, I guess, began to ingest massive amounts of miso in order to help cleanse themselves, purge themselves of these purported heavy metals, you know, that were part of their bloodstream and basically were poisoning them. So has anyone heard of miso being used as a way of accomplishing this?
No, I've heard miso is very good for you, but I've not heard this story.
Well, might want to check that out. It's one of the things that we let our Japanese friends know last year, and was trying to help them become aware of that, draw that to their attention. So, and let's not forget, I'm not sure about the accountability. It doesn't seem that there's been much, really, from what I can gather, just a typical passing of the buck as far as things go. A lot of finger pointing and the old blame game being played. Anyone wants to comment on that, feel free. But on top of that, there have been heroes, too. Let's not forget the so-called Fukushima 50 that, I guess, right in the heat of things, went in. The radioactive levels were just out of this world, and they essentially sacrificed themselves and their lives in order to try to achieve some form of containment where they could get the reactor to stabilize and so that the levels of it wouldn't explode, essentially, because that's, or had it exploded, or what's?
Yeah, from my studies, there's been a single explosion. I think that was reactor number 4. You can see pictures from drones and stuff. It's clear that the building is blown almost to the ground. It's basically only about 1.5 walls of the building is standing. That shouldn't happen. The reason they designed those kind of concrete encased shells was because when there's been minor nuclear meltdowns in the past, it was decided that these safety shells had to be built. So, yeah, there was one exploded, and the rest we're keeping in, what's the word? They're reacting slowly and not going boom because we're pouring all this water on them, but then the water's running off with all this. It hurts my head to think about. I'm sorry, I'm just the stand-in Moto from Australia. And yeah. If we had Moto here, he'd have all the bases covered. And I was just researching this because I'm soon going to put up a video on my YouTube channel about Fukushima. So
unfortunately today, yeah, we just weren't able to get our Moto running. So true Easy Rider fashion. But yeah, 400 tons of radioactive water were being dumped into the Pacific on a daily basis. TEPCO had claimed that it had at that point been reduced. Question that a lot of people were asking, of course, is can they be trusted? I would say not, of course, because like with a lot of things in this world, especially where these huge, you know, multinational vested interests are concerned, give me a break. So any recent reports, though, just quickly, that anyone has heard as far as the levels of radioactive water being dumped into the ocean? Has it gone up or down, or have they managed to stabilize things on that front? I think Stompy, maybe you had mentioned that or referred to that earlier.
I've not researched the latest things happening. I've done all the back research and was just going to do the update research. I assume Moto would be here with the updated research. Now making excuses for myself. No, I don't know. TEPCO did make some comments that they'd changed the system where the water was flowing. On top of that, this is something people haven't heard about. I saw a video on YouTube. There's literally 1.5 million gigantic plastic bags of totally radioactive soil that they don't know what to do with. Have you seen this? It's this mountain.
Yeah.
Plastic bags. It's like, well, we've cleaned it up. Oh. And then it's like, yeah, now what do we do with it? It's just...
Well, and that's what I was saying regarding the hemp. They never even turned to that and looked at it as an option because of the stigma and the taboo, which is just a pack of lies, of course. Mother Nature is providing all of these natural solutions and remedies, but because of their just the ignorance and the insanity, can you just imagine if hemp had have been planted throughout the region and it had proven successful? I mean, they never even did a test run, for crying out loud, because of the, as Moto said, oh, Japanese people think hemp is evil, you know, that was it, case closed. Nothing outside of that, unfortunately. So, and that's, you know, could very well lead to more people losing their lives, more of course, an impact on the environment, more fish dying and the waters being more greatly contaminated, and just a whole string of what would have otherwise been easily prevented problems. But just in closing, though, folks, I think we're going to wrap things up now. If anyone's got any final remarks that they'd like to have our listeners know about, or maybe just that we haven't hit on to this point, something that is worth bringing up and really kind of driving home. Larry, Valkyrie?
I have one last little piece since I've been looking at articles during this whole conversation. Most of the numbers are all very copy and pasted for the information on the cancer increase, which is from 24% to 24.4%, unless you went to an independent article which said that the actual increase for cancer ratings from the people affected by the Fukushima meltdown was actually 24% increase to 47%.
Are we talking Japan now in particular?
In particular for Japan, and also the increase for radiation has officially affected everything from Japan's coast to the U.S. coast in almost, minimal affected area is 40% radiation.
Minimal?
Minimal.
Wait a minute. The entire region and country of Japan, there's been a 40% increase of radioactivity?
No, the minimal affected part of the water. Like, if you went to the forest area that it's being affected, it's 40% of the water is radiated.
Where exactly are we talking about in particular?
If I pull up the full map, Fukushima map, 40% range is hitting just... It would be in the middle region of the Pacific Ocean, almost hitting towards South America. It's that far down.
Wow.
There's actually small branches reaching down to Antarctica.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah,
everything has been hit.
North Australia as well. We've only found the increased levels because of amateur scientists and, people buying Geiger counters. There's a website in Australia dedicated to the effects that Fukushima is having on Northern Australia. And these people were actually being highly professional and, double-checking their data against other parameters and exposing exactly how they were checking and what they were, it was like the person checking moss samples from his roof. And it showed you the exact process that he took it to a specific laboratory. He gave you all the... So total transparency there from our amateur scientists, and they're showing, as far away as Australia, that's showing raised radioactivity levels, and then from our own governments and from our own media, we're just getting fed this filtered horse shit, pisses me off.
Well, like I said earlier, it seems to me that it's quite predictable, really, that any time you have a natural disaster or an event that they want to exaggerate and really blow out of proportion, media can quite easily do that. The bias is just, it's extreme and quite something, really, how they try to manipulate people's perception of the facts and events, and hence, what we have now these days with this latest business regarding fake news. At the same time, if they want to downplay something as far as that whole business goes, they can easily do that too. So just look how much, for example, with Trump these days, how much the media, just everyone, is dogpiling and attacking the guy. The polls were so far off, ridiculously so, and he ends up winning in the end anyways, and still maintaining, according to the official polls now these days, something like 50-some-odd% popular support throughout America. So you can imagine the way that goes. It's probably even higher, of course. As I was saying, that things are just so distorted and warped that I can't believe anything they say anymore. And that's just another reason why I really don't watch television and haven't done so for the past number of years. Wow, a lot of great ground that we've covered here. Pirate Larry, I'm not sure if you have any closing remarks or not. Hopefully, maybe a thing or two to just kind of throw out there before we call it a day.
Well, it's like chemtrails or anything else. I mean, they're poisoning the planet. We got to keep screaming about it. We got to keep telling people about it. It hasn't gone away. It's not an issue that's gone away. So, until there's enough pressure, I don't think they'll address it. We got to keep on talking about this stuff because it is getting worse. Like Lord Stompy said, this is not getting any easier.
And as I said, the social, medical and ecological fallout is yet to start really hitting. We're seeing the thin end of the wedge starting. The fish die-offs, starfish die-offs, the shelled animal die-offs, and these are all happening from Canada down to South America. So that's kind of bummed me out, not just the fact that the ocean in that area is dying in a massive, large area, but I look up things like the National Geographic Channel because they had some scientists talking about it to me, knowing the small amount of facts that I know now, seeing these scientists, they all pass it off as being, oh, the temperature's changed. They pass it off as some global warming scenario. They said, oh, the temperature of the planet's changed and the ocean current's going slightly different. Oh, that's why the seal population's all dying and the starfish and this and that. There wasn't a single mention about Fukushima on any of these science documentaries about the dying of the Pacific Ocean. It didn't factor in. It just wasn't there. And I'm thinking these are mainstream damn scientists. They're biologists, never mind our own fake news and our fake politicians. Who's put the fake scientists in there?
So, and they could talk about was the so-called man-made CO2-based climate change. That was the big, that was the position they wanted to take, and they really wanted to try to drive that home. Is that right, Stompy?
None of them mentioned getting seawater and testing it for radiation levels in the local area. None of them mentioned Fukushima. And all of them seemed genuinely mystified as why such large slabs of the ocean are going through this massive amount of trauma. Last year, the seals, it was like about 80% of their puppies died. It was reported that the mother seals, they're the worst shape any scientist has ever seen them. They're all starved. It's not that just that they were sick. There's not fish left in the ocean, you know. I'm starting to get real mad about it now. Better wrap up there because I'll start using curse words and the people at home don't want to hear me use my cursing voice. Well, I'm a pirate. When I start cursing, it's bad cursing.
Die, the pirates up there. Got that a bad profanity for time to time. That's not it. Don't worry about that, bye.
Well, it's not just that. Then the authorities won't like me either because I'll connect their names to some of my curse words and they'll know exactly what I'm thinking of them.
Well, there you go. Well, the captain just actually, he seems to think it's all right, but as do most of the crew. But I think we get your point, too. One of the things, just quickly, with respect to this nonsense of, you know, man-made global carbon-based climate change, you never hear them mention, and the acidification of the oceans, you never hear them mention anything about the thousands. Who knows how many there are, really, but there's many, many thousands, I'm quite sure. These sub-oceanic volcanoes spewing out all kinds of material 365 days a year, 24/7. On top of that, the sun. You know, nothing to do. It can't ever talk about the sun, of course, as far as your scientific equations are concerned for some reason.
On another note entirely, I have a friend who's a chief scientist in Australia, and he's interesting guy. I ask him specific questions because he tells me the inside scientific information that the public doesn't hear. He said, all the evidence is we're heading towards the next ice age. Okay, he said the sun's at a solar minimum. There's all these signs in the climate. So I told him straight out, I said, I really don't believe a lot of this global warming propaganda. I said, the climate is definitely changing. I said, there's definitely strange stuff going on. But I said, we're getting our coldest winter. Last few years, it's been the coldest and wettest winters we've ever had. Our summers have barely not existed, etc. And he said, oh, yeah, well, that's because all the science to us within the scientific community, are we heading for an ice age?
Oh, yeah, they've been talking about that since the mid-1970s, along with similarly what occurred during that time, the mid-1970s, is this signing of a world weather modification treaty. Essentially, it's a weather warfare treaty that was signed off on in Geneva at the UN back in 1976, I guess. So, and then people think you're crazy when you talk about the possibility of people being able to, humanity being able to control the weather through various means. So, I mean, the U.S. Navy, in fact, has, or is it Navy or Air Force? One of the two. They've laid it out, stated right in their papers there that you can easily find and track down on DuckDuckGo. They're out to control the weather by, I think it's Owning the Weather is the name of the paper, by 2020 or 2025. But anyways, folks, on that note, we probably missed out on a few issues that we should have hit on and should have discussed, but it's been pretty lively and energetic. We're going to head back on to the one of the local watering holes, whether it's the Mossy Wench, the Howling Wolf, or the Scurvy Dog. Those seem to be among the favorites that the crew and captain prefer. We'll be back next week, too, with Valkyrie, our very own Valkyrie. She's a new crew member. She's just recently joined us, helped out with last week's show that we streamed via Slab City as we welcomed Bo Keeley on board. We've also got a Patreon account in place. Let's not forget that, folks. So, yeah, be sure to check that out and give us
patronize
a little bit
of the Patreon.
Yeah.
Dear people. Patronize the Patreon. Pirating to be done, people.
Yeah, no, we need to keep that. That's what helps keep us afloat. You're right on the mark there for sure, Stompy. So we need to get that out there and help promote that link and share it around so people can see it a little more. And I think what it comes down to is like a dollar or two per month is what people can pledge. And, of course, we do share half of all of our income is targeted for public redistributions. So we'd like to help those that are maybe a little more in need than ourselves in true Robin Hood fashion. Next week, as I said, Valkyrie, we're going to have some great conversation with her regarding her situation in Kelowna, her numerous adventures over the years. When it comes to technology and technical engineering and so forth, a real welcome addition to have here on the Robin Hood. Casey Lartigue Jr. will be following things up the week after that with discussion of the refugee situation, folks coming down from North Korea and making a new life and home for themselves in the South. So that should be quite interesting to get into some of the issues that are related to that whole business. Don't forget as well, we've got different places you can find us throughout social media, folks. Twitter, minds.com. Facebook, YouTube, I'm not sure if we're really missing out on much here or not, but all kinds of good stuff on that front. So we're going to close things off with a Minds.com based musician, someone that we found over there on that social network and information sharing platform. His name is Sal Caruso. I believe he's based out of the New York area. It's his Bare Bones mix from 2012. Something called New World Order Slaughter. Mm-hmm.